This podcast is sponsored by Runway, air traffic control for your mobile releases. Put your releases on autopilot. Runway will shepherd your release from kickoff to submission to release with no manual intervention. A single source of truth for your releases. Runway integrates with your favorite tools for a bird's eye view over release progress and blockers. Make your releases collaborative. Get a rich, contextualized release runbook that makes capturing responsibilities and tracking tasks crystal clear. Get more control on your releases on App Store and Play Store. Point your browser to runway.team. Thank you for sponsoring my podcast. I'm also revamping my newsletter. Check it out, appforce1.net to sign up. You can also find a sign-up link on my Twitter profile. Hi, before we begin, I wanted to make sure that you are aware that this episode is part of a two-part series. The first part will be on my feed, and the second part will be on Leo's feed. Search for Empowered Apps in your podcast player of choice to find the other episode. It will be available one day after publishing this one. In this episode, I will interview Leo, and on his podcast feed, Leo will interview me. Links are in the show notes. Enjoy! Hi, and welcome to another special episode with Leo G. Dion. It's actually very interesting how the two of us came into contact with each other. Leo has his own podcast for a while now, and he also is a freelancer, I think he is, and he has his own brand and some products that he's actually working on. Hi, Leo, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, I'm great, actually. This is my first time interviewing somebody else who's actively podcasting at the moment, so it's a bit new territory for me, and I believe it's for you also something of a first time, right?
Yeah, well, let's see if I've interviewed anybody that's been on a pod that's does their own podcast, right? I think Paul Two Straws, Paul Hudson, he has his own podcast. I've interviewed him, and Guy Rambo has had his own podcast. So I'm trying to think who else. Those are the big two that I can think of right now. But you're my third Dutch guest.
Third already. Okay.
So congratulations on that.
So, but there's one thing that's a bit special about what we're doing, because I'm going to be on your podcast and you're on my podcast right now, right?
Yes, exactly. This is going to be a fun little experiment for 2021.
Yeah, because this is going to be the first episode that both of us are releasing in the new year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody. I just want to start a little bit with your origin story, because you're a name that that pops up regularly on my Twitter feed, and I'm seeing more and more of your stuff popping up online. Who is Leo? What? Where did he grow up? Where did he start software development? What's your first language? Stuff like that.
So I was born and raised here in Lansing, Michigan, in the United States. Been here my whole life. Went to school here. Went to college here at Michigan State University. I've always been interested in technology. Even as a young kid, I loved playing video games, and got an Amiga 500, which is a rarity here in the US, but still, that was my first main computer. I eventually joined the PC world in the mid-90s and started, as I was doing my bachelor's degree here in the US, learned, obviously, C++. That's part of anybody's computer science curriculum, but also got into PHP and this new language that just came out called C#, and I really liked it, and I became a big fan of .NET and .NET development. Besides doing PHP work, I was doing internet service, tech support for an internet service provider back when we had to use our landline phones. For those of you who don't know what that means, that's how we connected to the internet. We had a thing called a modem. It was a lot slower, and sometimes it would make your parents upset because it would use the phone line while you're trying to connect. And so I ended up getting a job as a tech support rep, helping people set up their Outlook Express or setting up their Netscape Navigator so they can connect online. And then eventually I got a job doing kind of building websites internally using PHP and MySQL. And that was really my big introduction, along with my computer science degree. Eventually, the job market wasn't really that great in the early aughts, so to speak. So then I ended up getting a master's degree in digital media and art technology. And that really introduced me to stuff like Flash and video editing and audio editing and things like that. Skills that I didn't use right away, but I've actually been using quite a bit over the last year that I've really enjoyed. Even though like Flash is dead now in 2021. But I, right after I got my master's degree, the company ended up getting bought out, ironically, and I had to end up going back from doing web development to being a tech support rep, which I was when I was a freshman, and that wasn't really working with me since I just had this big master's degree. And now I'm going back to doing when I was a freshman. So I ended up getting a job at the state of Michigan here doing more .NET development. Government work really wasn't a good fit for me. So then I got a full-time gig at a small software company doing a lot of visualization stuff, a lot of what was called Silverlight at the time in C#. And then they were like, hey, like we want to build an app for this new device called an iPad. That was my first application that I ever built for an Apple device. And I was like, this stuff is big. It's really important. A lot of people use their iPhones. And so I started really getting into iOS development. And eventually, you know, I talked with my wife and we felt it was a good time for me to start my own business. And that's what I did. I kind of did a little bit of everything, PHP, C#, Objective-C. But then I started to really find that my passion was in the Apple space and started really focusing on doing that. And once Swift came out, that was where I was going to invest my time in, was Swift development. And I've been doing that since Swift came out back in 2014. And that's what I've been doing with Bright Digit. And then I have, you know, been doing the podcast for a couple of years now. A lot of talking, a lot of public speaking, not only Cocoa Heads, but around the world now this year, around the world in whatever manner that means in 2020. But yeah, I've been really liking it. I've been really loving doing Swift development, server side, client side, watch, Pi, whatever it is. And it's been great.
So what I find interesting in your introduction that you now did is that you also, again, are someone that's mentioning that you have a life partner that is actually very much part of the business side of things that you're running. Of course, it's your business, you're doing it. But I reckon she's involved with a lot of the decision-making, what you will be focusing your time on, because everything has a cost and everything has a benefit. Is that the same for you as well, that at the kitchen table, business gets discussed or not?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, my wife Betsy's been awesome, especially this year with all the craziness and the kids home all the time. And like, if anything, she's been really encouraging about the business, especially, you know, they say there's like peaks and troughs, and she's been really fantastic during the troughs and really encouraging. And that's been fantastic. And we've like, part of life isn't just like making money and having this business, but also having this family here and like living life and not just living everything for the business. And I think that's part of the big picture of, you know, doing this is having much more of a big picture of like where I see myself in 10, 20 years. Running Bright Digit.
How many kids do you have?
5.
That's a big family.
We've always wanted to have a big family, but we struggled for our first few years trying to have kids. So part of starting Bright Digit was also we decided to jump into doing adoption and foster care here in Michigan. And so, our first 4 kids are adopted, and then we have a birth kid as well, our youngest, who's quite a little scamp, who's really, really cute, really cute kids, really wonderful. So yeah, that's part of our life this year is like me doing this podcast and running a business while having kids home for a vast majority of this year, actually, you know, during the remote learning thing. So yeah.
So when you ventured out on your own, the company that you started for yourself was immediately called Bright Digit.
I was trying to look for something like digital and coding based, while at the same time, like clean, well designed. And so like, I think it was bustaname.com, where you can search synonyms and it'll search for domain name availability based on synonyms. And Bright Digit was available. And I was like, has a good ring to it. I like it. So that I ended up going with that. I'm still, it's actually a good name. I actually still like it. So yeah.
As Brad Ditchett, when it started, what was the business plan in the beginning?
The business plan. Try to find a gig. That was it.
Make money.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to do product stuff too. I think that was a big part of it, is the passion of like being able to work on your own thing. But like the independence of being a contractor and like picking your own schedule and your own hours was a big deal to me. So those two things kind of work together in a sense. And then it was just a matter of like finding out how important it was to find a specific thing I was really good at. Because like, while I can do pretty much anything, like I wanted to be much more, I don't know how to put it. Like there's a whole idea of like a T-shaped developer, where you have like kind of a good idea of everything, but you're really good at one specific thing also. And I found like the Swift space was really a great place to do that. Like, there's 100,000s of like JavaScript developers out there. JavaScript is major and huge. And I could have stayed in that. And I actually like started a JavaScript group probably like 6 years ago or so, because there was no JavaScript group in town meetup. But like, it's really like the money and the community and like the focus is really in Swift. And I've just consistently like stayed in that space, and it's been fantastic.
Okay, so nowadays you're podcasting. I reckon that you have some products, and that you also still do contract work. I think. So if you look at your in 2020 your income portfolio, and you compare it to when you started Bright Digit, what were the biggest shifts in where your income was coming from?
I don't think the shift, like there hasn't really been a shift. Like still my income is by and large like the contract work easily. It's much more like where I spend my time and what I spend my time doing. So I would say like 2019 was my best year in a lot of ways. But obviously with 2020, like I took a hit, like everybody did, I think. And part of that was like a conscious decision on my part, going back to family, was like, I just don't have the time with all the kids home doing 40-hour-a-week contracts. I don't. And I've told people that, like, and it's been tough in a lot of ways, because I've had to say no to some stuff. But it's just, I'm just being honest with my clients and being like, look, like I got kids at home. I can't put in the amount of time I'd love to put in on a contract and doing every year, all the other day-to-day stuff I have to run with my business. So like, that's the sacrifice I've had to make this year. I think next year it's not going to be anywhere near as bad, but yeah, just like, you know, it is what it is. And I've had to do that.
So you're saying that the biggest change between 2020 and 2019 was that you had to work from home instead of at your contracts office?
I've always worked from home. It's that there's other people at home with me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So you were always with Bright Digit, you were always a remote worker.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'd love to go on to certain clients' sites if needed. Like, I don't mind that, but that just couldn't happen, honestly, in 2020. So, and then with the kids home, doing remote school for probably about 6 months, it just was really difficult. And then being home in the summer, too, you know, it was really difficult for my wife and I to kind of manage that and both work. So we had to, like, split up our schedule in such a way that one of us can focus on the kids and one of us can focus on work.
So, and your wife is, she's working as well?
Yeah, she's also pretty savvy when it comes to math and technology. She's an actuary. So yeah, it's important for her to be able to have her meetings as well.
You already mentioned that you did a big simplification of your entire business process in 2020 due to circumstances.
Yeah. Well, what's funny, the other thing too in 2019 is I pretty much stopped hosting meetups and doing the local networking. And that was totally a coincidence. And I think it worked out to my benefit in 2020, because obviously there is no local networking or meetups in 2020. So that's like my big thing in 2019, was just kind of like really honing my focus. So I had another podcast, OK Productive, with Eric Gillespie. And like at the end of 2019, we both mutually discussed ending that, you know, and that was very amicable. And so I cut that out. And then I wanted to focus more on attending conferences and public speaking in 2020, which actually worked out to my benefit in a lot of ways. So yeah, and I'm still kind of in a simplification streak. I'm trying to still figure out how to simplify even further in 2021. But I cleared out a lot of things at the end of 2019.
So when I looked for you as a conference speaker in 2020, I actually saw that you were at quite a number of events as a speaker, probably not in person, but digitally online. Stuff like CodeMesh, CocoaHeads Live, UIConf, 360 iDev, Back to Mac, Swift Heroes Live, iOS DC DevCamp, and NS Spain. Did you have a lot of experience speaking at conferences before this year or not?
I think 2019, I did 3 conferences and maybe one other conference. And I think that was it. Like the leap from 2019 to 2020 was quite tremendous as far as the amount of talks I did this year.
Business wise, did it bring you any benefit already, or are you still working on that?
I think it's still a work in progress, but I think definitely like name recognition became a thing, and like being able to like have your name out there is always a big benefit. I got to meet like a lot of really cool people and got to meet actually like a lot of future guests for the podcast that way. Also for me, I think I'm continually like honing my presentation skills. I did Toastmasters for a few years, and that was really good for starting off. But like, there is the, you'll appreciate like the IT side of actually doing a presentation, both live as well as edited, that each have their own little idiosyncrasies that you have to get used to. So like, that was a benefit to me as well.
So the conference talks, were those pre-recorded or did you perform them live?
So CodeMesh I actually did in January, and that was actually in person. So I did it. I was actually able to squeeze out a live in-person talk in 2020. So I did 2 live in-person talks there. And then out of the rest of the conferences, I would say about half were live and half were edited.
So what decides whether or not you're doing a talk live or pre-recorded?
I always prefer pre-recorded. So really, that was a decision of the conference organizers as far as whether they wanted to do live or in person. I think it would have been UIConf was the first one I did where I was given that option. And at first I was thinking live because then I don't have to edit it. But in the end, it just ended up being like a lot easier for me to edit and record it and put that out. So I've always preferred now at this point, like doing pre-recorded conference videos.
It's interesting because this topic is something that's very near and dear to me as well, because with the Dutch CocoaHeads, we also have, we've been doing our monthly meetups throughout the year, also during lockdowns, and we weren't able to do them in person. But there we also had the discussion of whether or not we want to do the talks like in person, in front of a camera, or pre-recorded and that we then just broadcast the video. And in the end, it's also for us hosting an event, it's much easier to have a pre-recorded video because you don't have all the extra connectivity that can all break down with the speaker. And that's for us, that's the biggest benefit of having something pre-recorded, because it takes away another point of failure in the entire process.
I think like, I've heard a lot of attendees feel like they miss out on something with a pre-recorded video. But in my opinion, I don't think it's really there. I think that with the pre-recorded video, you can, I think you need to have the host available, or the presenter available both during the talk as well as have like an actual live Q&A or have them on Slack as well. And I think if you can do that, you gain a lot more, I think, than trying like the benefit of just having the live talk. I don't honestly see it, because it's kind of like, if they flub, they flub. Like, I guess if you want that, like, good for you. But like, as far as pre-recorded, there's a lot of benefits to it.
Yeah, it is mandatory for us that the speaker is in chat available during the presentation, but also afterwards. We also have a live Q&A unless stuff drops out. But
yeah, and I think that's totally reasonable. I think that that gives the attendee everything they want. They have access to the speaker to ask them any questions.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you did a lot of conference talks in 2020, a lot more than in 2019.
Yes.
even though you were planning on reducing your workload on the conference area, you did a lot more.
Yeah, and I think like part of it was with the less contract work, I just pretty much picked up more public speaking in a way to make up for that. Hopefully, like basically making like an investment, more long-term investment in the future by doing these public speaking gigs. I mean, I enjoyed it. But obviously like there's a reason for me to do it besides just, you know, giving back to the community.
You mentioned that you did less contract work. Was that a conscious decision, even though the circumstances might have made it harder as well to do contract work in the new COVID era?
No, it just goes back to time availability. Like I would have done as much contract work given if 2020 was a more normal year, but with everybody home, it just became difficult to manage full-time contract. A lot of people want you for that full-time contract work. And I don't have the availability to do that with everybody home.
Yeah, I can imagine. Same thing going on here, except that I have a day job, so to speak. But they've been very supportive in how things are going here in the Netherlands, so that's okay as well.
And that's really good.
Yeah, it's so important to be able to stay sane this year.
Yeah.
So you ended the local meetups in 2020. You focused more on networking, but then through your own brand, because you cut out the OK Productive on good terms with your other host Eric. So what I noticed is that you've been sending out quite a few newsletters and you've been blogging more in 2020 as well. You already mentioned that you made a conscious switch from focusing the networking effort that you do more towards your own brand. How did that work out for you in 2020?
I think it worked out pretty well considering, you know, the weirdness that is to 2020. Like, especially with the podcast, like I've seen actual growth there, even though people aren't commuting, which I feel like is a big part of podcast listening is commuting. But yeah, the podcast has continued to grow. And yeah, it's just kind of honing the brand as far as like, I have two audiences, really. I have the audience of folks who are managers and CTOs who might hire me at some point for a contract. And then I have fellow developers, and just trying to make sure that I balance that. The developers who are interested in the nitty gritty of a specific API and how to do development, and then the CTOs and managers who are more interested in, okay, how do I use the specific Swift technology with my team, and managing that. And I think that's the kind of balancing act that I'm still kind of figuring out here in 2021.
Yeah, yeah, it's indeed true that if you have a tech audience and a more management focused audience, that you, yeah, of course, both groups are somewhat technical, but there is a difference in how you have to serve your message to each audience.
Right, exactly.
So how do you manage to put all that in one podcast episode? Because I listen to your podcast as well. Because it's one of the few podcasts out there that has a longer lifespan and that is actually stays interesting to me.
Thank you.
But how do you manage to balance this? Because I'm a software developer and I'm one of those guys that give me some technical challenge and I go deep. But then having to explain it to somebody who's non-technical, it takes a lot of effort and energy out of me. So how do you balance this, and how do you make sure that both sections of your content remain interesting to both groups of listeners?
So like, I think I can bring a unique perspective by covering more of like the team side of it, or maybe more of the managerial side of it, because like, it's one thing to do server-side Swift, for instance, but it's another thing to be like, okay, like when is this actually practical to use? Why is it if you're a manager, why is it so much better to have server-side Swift as opposed to having like a separate Ruby team or a separate PHP team or C-sharp team, for instance? You know, what is the business reasons? Not just like, oh yeah, I love Swift, I want to keep doing Swift, because that would be the reason I would do it, right? But like, if you're actually making a product or have a big major company that's medium to enterprise size, like that's where it's like important to consider that cost and why you might want to do it. And then, okay, once you've done that, like what are some pitfalls when it comes to managing that team? Because I think like the technical stuff is actually not that hard. It's the, okay, I've got a team of five. How do I manage this work in the most productive fashion based on a specific technology such as like server-side Swift and keep it going? Because I think like that's really at the end of the day when it comes to having a business and making money to keep it sustainable. I think that's the question that like most folks have, and that will keep the money flowing, so to speak. Does that answer your question?
I think so, yeah. It's a good one, and I think it's you indicate that you start at the basis, the technical stuff, and then basically you make it interesting for the engineers, and then you explain it to the management type of person to actually attach a value to what you have just discussed. So, and I think that's actually pretty good, because these business types, they're always thinking in value streams and what's in it for me. And if you can explain that as software developers, I've noticed that it's a lot easier to convince your boss to actually be okay with dropping iOS 12 support, for instance, because there's actual business value.
Right. Like a Swift UI, for instance, that's a great example, right? Where it's like, I know why I like Swift UI. I know the benefits of Swift UI. But like if you have a big major app where you have a lot of people that are still on iOS 12, or you have a big code base that still uses a lot of UIKit, that's a big investment to switch over to Swift UI. So the question ends up becoming is like, for the business, how do I slowly transition to Swift UI? Because it is the future. Why should I switch over to Swift UI? Why do I make this big investment and change my whole architecture over to reactive programming? Those are the questions that you have to answer and make the business case on. It's not just like, oh, I want money because I'm selfish. You know, it's not just that. It's like, you have to keep a business running. You need money. Like if you turn your whole code, what was the story I read recently? Was it Uber? Like they moved all their code over to Swift. That was like a big Hacker News thing, right? Like they moved all their code base over to Swift, and it was like, you know, I love Swift, but like that's a big business decision to move your code over to version 1.0. Now, I don't know the whole exact story, but like that's a great example of like just being this like person who just jumps onto something enthusiastically because it's, because they do see a future in it, but at the same time, like there's a risk that you're taking. And I think it's important to like address that even to a technical audience. So, you know, new technologies have their risks attached to it, even if they are superior in a lot of ways.
Yeah, that's true. Because at the place where I work, we have a code base of 5 years old, which is a couple hundred thousand lines of code. Still a lot of Objective-C in there, which has been reduced in this year by quite a number, from like 90,000 to 20,000 lines. And the Swift went up from 100,000 lines to 200,000 lines. And like a month ago, we were able to drop iOS 12 support. And now new functionality is and new features are intended to be built with Swift UI in and Combine. We're still finding our way, but we'll manage.
Luckily, like Apple is pretty, they've been pretty good, whether it's like with bridging files, right? When Swift came out, or even with Swift UI, there's a lot of ways you can do UI view representable and also go the other route, you know, with bringing in UIKit controls, bringing Swift UI into UIKit as well. Like they're usually good about making sure that that bridge is always there. But yeah, it's just, you know, be careful with any new technology. If you have something that works, you know, don't try to like necessarily come in and like break it by bringing something new in. Like, I think it sounds like you guys are doing the right thing, just slowly moving your code over from Objective-C.
Slowly and sometimes with a big hammer.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly.
Let's see. We discussed conference speaking that you did in 2020. We talked about your podcasting, the podcast. Do you have any growth numbers over the last year that you can share or that you're willing to share?
I'll give you, how about I give you percentages? I'll just say, like, over the last year, my numbers have gone up by like 400% as far as audience growth. That's even with, like I said, less people. I feel like less people are listening to podcasts in 2020 because they're not commuting. I could be totally wrong on that. I know I find myself having to be more purposeful about listening to podcasts and making time for it. But I'm on Transistor FM, which has been fantastic. Justin Jackson, who founded it, like personally got me to switch over because I was hosting podcasts on like AWS S3 and WordPress and it sucked. So I'm really glad I moved over to Transistor since then. And that's been really good. But yeah, I mean, it seems like growth has kind of snowballed over the year, which has been fantastic as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, double-digit growth numbers are good, but triple-digit growth numbers are really good. Congratulations on that for this year.
Thank you.
So I'm hoping to replicate your your success because I started in October. My main focus right now is to not pod fade after 3 months and to make sure that I keep on going and that I get a rhythm going with my podcast.
Yeah, like one of the things that I found encouraging, I don't know where I read this. I think it might have been Pat Flynn, but like MKBHD, I don't know if you follow him on YouTube, but like he didn't even get like 20 subscribers until he put out like 100 videos. I don't know the exact statistics, so please don't quote me on it. But like you have to, it's a long game with this stuff. It's not something that you can't expect after 3 episodes to have like 1,000 people subscribing to your podcast or thousands of people subscribing to your podcast. It's a long game you have to play. And like once you realize that, like then you set much more realistic expectations for your show.
Yeah, for me, the reason I started podcasting was because I did a presentation during COVID. So I was doing a live presentation and I really hated it because just talking to a wall, not getting feedback from an audience, that was so painful. And I was like, okay, best way to deal with this is to do it more often. And what's the best way to do that is to just start podcasting, right? And that was the initial idea, and then it's kind of snowballed from there.
Well, it's funny you say that because, like, going back to my thing about meetups and doing talks at meetups or hosting a meetup, like I found that it's honestly easier to reach a larger audience with a podcast than it is with doing a local meetup, especially here in a town that's not like super big. Like, it's a medium sized town, I would say, but like I can right now we're speaking to like hundreds of people or whatever your numbers are, and like that's easily, it's easier and it's easily reaching a bigger audience than you are you know, speaking at a local meetup, and it's recorded so like people can pick it up at any point and like listen to it, you know, in the future, so to speak.
There's a very long tail with your downloads. That's something I noticed as well, that sometimes you have an episode that doesn't like really, it's not a runaway success when you launch it, but then over the weeks and over the months, downloads keep on coming in, and then all of a sudden this person made some appearance somewhere, and well, the downloads were like sky high all of a sudden, and you were like trying to figure out what happened here. and then you just talk to this person and say, hey, that date, something special you did? Oh yeah, I appeared on some YouTube stream there and there, and you should look it up, it's fun. And then you look through it and it's like, yeah, he doesn't mention me, but he does mention something about podcast. So people were searching his name in podcast and found my episode. And of course, not all those people will stick, but hey, any download is good, right?
Yep, yeah.
So you also have a number of products that you're working on, HeartSwitch, Mistkit, Speculit, Orchid Nest. Can you first tell me what these four products are about in just a few words? And then what in 2020 were the biggest growth and the biggest successes with these products?
I'll start out with just like an open source project that I worked on, which is Mistkit. So I've been really interested in Swift packages. My last talk at NS Spain was on Swift packages. And I also am interested in server-side Swift. And with Hard Twitch, which we'll talk about in a bit, I ended up using a lot of CloudKit, but it also is a server-side app, and there's no like library out there to do any CloudKit stuff on the server. The CloudKit framework is only available for like Mac OS and iOS. So I started looking into the CloudKit, the dark area known as the CloudKit Web Services API, and started using it. So I'm actually was using CloudKit on the server for Hard Twitch. And then I refactored that into a separate library that's become Miskit, and slowly adding features to it. I think I'm on version 03 or 02, 04 maybe by the time we release this. But essentially, it's a way for you to be able to interface with CloudKit outside of the CloudKit framework, and essentially with the specific use case of being able to do talk to CloudKit via your own server-side application in Swift. So that is Miskit. And so that gets into Hard Twitch, which is a fun little app that I've written. I'm interested in doing watch development. I'm interested in doing server-side development. And I also, I like watching speedruns on occasion, if you know what that means. That's people who play video games and try to play usually classic games and try to beat them as fast as you can. Occasionally, I've seen folks share their heart rate while they do this. While there's a few products out there that aren't that great, honestly, I figured why not just use the heart rate monitor you have attached to your wrist a lot of times with the Apple Watch and share your heart rate that way. And so I built Heart Twitch. It's a way to share your heart rate from your Apple Watch to a web browser, and then being able to use like your whatever live streaming application you want to use to share that web browser window via Heart Twitch into OBS or whatever you're using. So that is essentially Heart Twitch. Speculid has been an app that I've been developing in the last 5 years. But it's essentially a Mac OS app for creating app icons and image sets out of SVG files. So it does all the complicated work of resizing and converting your graphics so that they can be used in an asset catalog in your Xcode project. And then lastly is Orchid Nest, which is kind of a little hobby site I've done. I'm using Dave Verwer's list of iOS developer blogs and building a online repository or website of all the different blog posts that come out. So it scans RSS feeds and creates a website that links to the different new blog posts in the Swift community that are out there. So those are the four main products I've been working on this year. Hard Twitch is the one probably that's Hard Twitch and Speculate are both in the App Store. They don't have monetization yet, but that is what I'm actually working on right now. Ironically, is learning more about Stripe and in-app purchases.
So that's actually three products and a supporting library. How have these three products been doing in 2020 compared to your contract work?
Really, Hard Twitch has been really growing a lot in the last year, especially since Halloween. So besides like speedrunning, there's a whole community of folks who play horror games and want to share their heart rate while they play horror games. And so Hard Twitch has really grown since Halloween here, you know, at the end of October. It doesn't have, obviously, any monetization yet. That's what I'm looking at right now. It's figuring out what's the best way to do that. But as far as growth, it's been doing really well. So now it's just a matter of figuring out the best way to, like, monetize that for folks.
Okay. So that's still a work in progress, but with a lot of potential, it seems. So I think we covered most of the things you did in 2020 by now. So what are your plans for next year? Because you have some products, you have a podcast, conference speaking is probably going to be a thing you want to keep working on. So how does the future look for Bright Digit?
You know, honestly, like I think what I'd like to see at the end of 2021 is a like greater focus in what areas have been really working and what haven't. I do want to keep doing conference talks. I think it's going to happen. I think I'm going to be probably, unfortunately, doing more remote talks. I don't think that's going to end anytime soon. And I'd like to get more into writing. Like, I feel like that's a big challenge for me, is like making that a regular thing of really targeted technical writing. And, you know, I'd love to be able to put out a book, but, you know, that was a goal that I would have set maybe a year or 2 years ago. But I also feel like I'd rather like not invest a lot of time into a book without knowing like what the audience really wants. And I think that's a big part of it, is that targeted time or that targeted content that I really have confidence knowing that this is what people really want in the Swift community.
So you're saying writing, that's more short form content, so blog posts, I reckon.
Yeah, and definitely in shorter form. Like, I think a lot of my blog posts in 2020 were really long, and I've started realizing that there's much more benefit to splitting that out into separate posts and doing it that way.
And the podcast is probably going to be, you keep it going on the rhythm that it's going right now, I guess?
Yeah, I think I'm going to have 43, 45 episodes out this year in 2020. So I don't intend on putting out more episodes. I don't feel this need to like put out an episode every week. I don't think that that's necessarily a great goal to set. I pretty much have been doing 3 episodes a month, roughly, you know, and then there's obviously busy season within summer with WWDC where I might want to, you know, put more episodes out. There's quiet times during December, for instance, where like I just want a break. So obviously there ebbs and flows, but I think consistently doing what I'm doing, maybe putting out more video and like solo episodes of just me talking. I'd like to do that. I wanted to do that more last year, but with doing the conference talks, it ended up kind of sucking that away. But yeah, just keep doing what I'm doing as far as the podcast is concerned. And I think it's continues to work, and I don't intend to change that really.
What I noticed is that you keep on mentioning your focus. So at the beginning of 2020, you already did a big change by cutting down a lot of the excess in your work. And by the sound of it, you want to put another round of reducing in place, so that you have like more focus on specific things and being sure that the things that you focus your attention on, that those efforts are actually more worthwhile compared to what you've been doing in the last 2 years. So what is your plan and what is your approach to actually figure out what needs your attention and when your attention is actually creating enough value for you?
That is a really good question. I think like part of it is, do I still have the passion for it? I don't think that can be underestimated. It's like, okay, is this like, am I just burning myself out trying to like keep going with the specific route? Whether it be like local networking or like, you know, putting up meetups and things like that. Is this really a benefit to me? Is it more of a distraction, honestly? And if it is, like, that's a good indicator. I feel like when I've already started to feel like this is not working out, that's probably a good indication, like, to trust my gut. I think, you know, I'd like to be able to cut out things in 2021, but with 2020 being as weird as it is, I don't think anything was given a fair shot, honestly. So unfortunately or fortunately, like this year, I don't think there's going to be a big change as far as what I'm going to cut out, but more an idea of like videos and conference talks has really worked out well. I've never done as many conference talks in my whole life as I did this year, and I want to continue doing that. And so that's given a lot more prominence than, say, writing. I think blog posts, I'd like to do that, but that's not anywhere near as high of a priority as the podcast or the products or the videos are doing. And so I think like just being able to understand at the end of 2021 that like this thing has really worked out well, this is where I need to invest my time, is what I'm hopefully looking forward to seeing at the end of the year.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Before we close, is there any parting word or some word of wisdom that you'd like to share with people that are listening to my podcast?
Find what you're passionate about and what people want and have focus. Because I think like it's really easy nowadays to spread ourselves way too thin. And I think like it's important to find something and have that balance with what you're passionate with and then being able to really deep dive in it, because that's going to be really helpful to a lot of people and it's going to be helpful to a lot of folks business-wise and in the community as well. And you know, just value your time. I think that's really important. I think we still I think that's been a big lesson in 2020, is like valuing that quiet time that you have and that focus that you need.
I can agree to that. So Leo, thank you for your time. And I think Bright Digit's future will be bright and digital in 2021.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody. Remember, the other episode is on Leo's feed, Empowered Apps. Links in the show notes. Lead Developer, best practices and tips for lead software developers. PDF, MOBI and EPUB format. appforce1.net/lead developer. All one word.